So I want to finish this series today. This will be more general than specific as last week was, but I think it'll help tie it together, this Better Sermon Series with the final message called Sometimes Better Means More of the Same. Let's start with a 90-year-old couple, Henry and Martha. Henry wakes up in the waiting room of the hospital and says, "Martha, where am I?" And she says, "You're in the waiting room of the hospital, or you're in the emergency room, Henry, you had a heart attack." "But Martha, you're right here." "Yes, Henry, I've been with you the whole time, and I'm going to stay with you the whole time." "Martha, you remember when we first started dating? How I tried to race that train to the tracks, and the train hit us, and I got knocked 300 feet and into a coma, but you fell out of the car. You remember that, Martha?"
"Yes, Henry, but I didn't fall out. I jumped out. I remember it."
"And I woke up in the hospital after being in a coma 4 weeks, and you were right there."
"Yes, Henry, I was there."
"And Martha, you remember on my 60th birthday that the cat knocked the cake over with the candles lit, and I burned over 70% of my body. You remember that, Martha? You were right there."
"Yes, Henry, I remember that. You were in the hospital for 2 months, and I was there."
"And now you're right here."
"Yes, Henry, I'm here." Well, with a tear in his eye, he reached over and grabbed her hand and said,
"Martha, you're bad luck."
You know, sometimes more of the same over and over and over and over can result in something negative. This message goes against the grain for me because I'm all about change. And I grew up in a church that did the same thing for the same way all my grown-up days. And I want to be clear this morning. When I talk about more of the same, I'm not talking about being in a rut. There ain't much difference between a rut and a grave, just a little bit of distance and a little bit of dirt. So I don't mean you need to be in a rut. But I do believe that sometimes better means more of the same. Same is not always a bad thing. Not always a bad word, but it's kind of had that connotation with it to hear preaching through the years. The verse that made me head down this path was 2 John 1. "Watch out that you do not lose what we've worked so hard to achieve. Be diligent," that means over and over, "so that you receive your full reward. Anyone who wanders away from this teaching..." Now, I don't want to argue, but for my friends who believe you can never lose or walk away from salvation, what do you do with this? "Anyone who wanders away from this teaching has no relationship with God. But anyone who remains in the teaching of Christ has relationship with both the Father and the Son." I think that sometimes more of the same is better. So let me give you 3 or 4 observations this morning. Number one, sometimes better means doing more of the same. We're obsessed with the sparkle in society, with the new, with the shiny. We're completely obsessed with the next big thing. And again, I feel conflicted because I know there's a lot of bad sameness out there. Matter of fact, I'll list 3 or 4 things, kinds of sameness that I think are bad, and I'll use movies because they help me remember, all right? Number one, there is a Groundhog Day sameness. How many of you have seen that movie? Groundhog, that's a pretty good movie. Wakes up at the same time, goes to the same coffee shop, does the same thing every single day, like a hamster in a wheel, Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. That's not the kind of same that I'm talking about this morning. That's settling for less because it's easy. Then there's a Dumb and Dumber sameness. And I won't ask how many of you have seen that movie. Touch the stove, ouch! Touch it again, ouch! Touch it again, ouch! As if anything is going to change. That's just dumb. Or you repeat the habits of your parents without ever questioning, now why am I doing this in the first place? You're familiar with the definition of insanity. You've heard it 100 times. It's really true. Doing the same thing over and over, expecting something to change. Insanity is this Groundhog Day sameness, Dumb and Dumber sameness. And then there's a stubborn sameness. Some of you ain't ever going to change, not because you're holding the line and you're faithful and you're diligent, but because you're stubborn. You just ain't going to change. So we'll use 2 mules for Sister Sarah. That was a good movie. And since there's mules involved, that's the movie I use to help me remember. There's this stubborn kind of sameness. And some of you are going to say, well, that's just the way I am. Got to keep it real. No, you're just stubborn. just stubborn. One Sunday, we're heading home from church, and we pass by our neighbor farmer, Charles Fred Brindley's field, and his mule is standing in the road. And my dad looks at my mom. My dad should think before he speaks, and he says, "Relative of yours?" And without missing a beat, she said, "Yeah, by marriage." Listen, if you're stubborn and bullheaded long enough, in the end, someone's going to get the joy that should have been yours all along. You hang on to that stubborn sameness. There's a Cape Fear sameness. It's where we do the same thing over and over because we're afraid to try to change things up and do something different. Where we keep circling the wagons, walking the same path because we're afraid to do anything different. This happens to churches where fear overrides faith and we keep doing the same thing because it's comfortable, risk-free, safe. But then there's a sameness that makes things better. I'll tell you what maybe brought this thought to mind. We went down to my dad's church, and then I've been there recently before this. And I think about how they do the same thing over and over. And some of that they need to change, in my opinion. But the faithfulness and the dedication and the stick to it. And I'm here now, and I'll be here 5 years praising the Lord, preaching, and I'll be here. There's something to be said about that. I think maybe that can make us better. So there's a movie that's not as well known as the ones I mentioned called Endurance. I don't know if you've seen this. It's about an Olympic gold medal winner who overcame incredible odds. If you ever have a chance, you should check that out. This is the kind of same I'm talking about. There are people who spend their whole lives trying to dig new wells, looking for new jobs, never satisfied or content with where they're at. Find a new town, search for a different church, newer things, better things, different things. I think the average stay of ministers in churches, it used to be about 2 years, Jimmy. And how in the world can a church grow and thrive, or can a minister even know how to minister to people in a two-year period before he's up and gone? Now, trust me, I know some of these guys, 2 years stayed, that's 1 year too long for people. I get that. I mean, we had a guy that stayed way too long when I was in high school. And that's before my dad started preaching, and man, he stayed way too long. And then when he finally got up to announce his resignation, he said, "Jesus is calling me to a different church." And no lie, the congregation broke out in, "What a friend we have in Jesus." I've been giving a lot of thought to this, and I don't know if it's age-related or the acquisition of wisdom, which is what I'm going to hang it on. But the more I continue to read and study the Bible, the more I'm convinced the word same has been given a bad rap. Jesus was in the garden praying. He went to check on his disciples, and they had fallen asleep, which kind of hurt his feelings. And then he comes back, and what did he pray when he came back? Anybody know? Pray a new prayer? Nope. Mark 14:39. Once more he went away and prayed. Same thing. 1 Corinthians 12, Paul tells us there are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. Philippians 2, make my joy complete, having the same love. Philippians 2, 5, I've always strived for this. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus. And one of the classic verses of the Bible is Hebrews 13, 8. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. The Bible teaches us that sometimes better could be doing more of the same thing. You feel like you're in that rut and nothing changes, and you're just putting your head down and plowing every day. You know what? You keep right on, because sometimes that's better. Secondly, sometimes better means developing more of a routine. Now, I know this is very similar to the first thought, but it's a little bit different because this involves intent. Some of you get into some bad routines. In John 15, Jesus talked about being a vine, and we are the branches that are attached to him, and we are to abide or stay in him. And if we stay in him, we'll bear fruit. You remember the story about Joshua marching around the city of Jericho and how they got up every morning and marched around the city and did the same thing every single day. Sometimes growth comes through the process and we don't even see it. Why do you think God instructs us to show up to worship together on a weekly basis? And God does instruct us to do that, by the way. Because he knows that routine and that habit and that coming together, eventually the process will be awesome, and you won't look at it as, "Oh, I got to go to church again," but, "Hey, I get to go to church again. I can't wait for Sunday." That's what the Lord wants for us. Why do you think the Lord instructs us to be faithful in studying the Word and in prayer, meditate and memorize the Bible, make it a daily habit? Do it again, over and over and over. It's like practicing the piano or hitting a golf ball, shooting baskets. The routine brings you growth, and you'll get better at spiritual things if you develop a routine. My Uncle Ben was a farmer, lived in Five Points, Indiana. I'll give you $100, you can find that on a map. And it went too far from us, and he had some dairy cattle, and he would always say, the hardest thing about milking cows is they never stay milked. It's funny how long sometimes it takes for something to be routine. I haven't been wearing my seatbelt all that long. I'm trying. I see the wisdom in it, and I certainly haven't been wearing a motorcycle helmet very long. And I'm trying. Don't judge me. Some of you just scowled at me. I'm trying. But when you don't do something and then you're trying to, you don't even realize you're doing it. I put my seatbelt on just to go to Steak and Shake one morning early to bring Priscilla and Jamie and myself three of those giant Diet Cokes to get through the day. And I go to get out of my car out here in the parking lot and didn't know I had my seatbelt on because I never wear my seatbelt. Well, I did that day. And it jerked me back in the car and 3 gallons of Diet Coke went all over me, and I want to tell you that story while Priscilla's here so she knows the lengths I'll go to for her. When I grew up, did y'all wear seatbelts growing up? Are you young enough to? Let me pick on somebody. Jimmy, did you wear a seatbelt growing up? You're younger than I am. No? Didn't have them, did they? If they did, they were tucked under. Nobody ever knew they were there. I didn't need a seatbelt. We had a routine. The safety device in my car was Rose Fugate. You ride up front, right? She lays on the brakes. That's the routine. Just like that. And I said, Mom, why are you doing that? Because I don't want you to go through the windshield. Well, that would have hurt less than what you just did to me. I researched it just for Mom's sake. And I told her on the phone one day, listen, Mom, I looked this up. During that time period when I grew up, no children died going through the windshield. Thousands were injured by their mother's forearm. It's why I love riding with my grandma. She had that little floppy thing going on right there. That always felt better. I got used to that routine, and whenever I heard the brakes, I knew a forearm shiver was coming. Whenever we talk about routine, it's pictured as boring or old hat or robotic. But it's beneficial. If it brings maturity, if the routine brings maturity, and the routine is drawing you closer to Jesus, and the routine is bringing you more knowledge of the Bible, and the routine is bonding relationships with your church family, and the routine is transforming the way you worship, making you a better father, making you a better mother, the routine's making you a better spouse, routine is strengthening your prayer life, if the routine is putting you in position to endure the storm, and if the routine is giving you a better handle on spiritual things, and if the routine is taking you from where you were to where you are, then the routine has been the reward. Thank God that I put in the time and that I did what I needed to do all those years, all those days, all those hours, all those minutes, studying and praying and reading and serving and showing up and doing what God wants me to do. Sometimes better means routine. Number three, sometimes better means determining more of a response. My dad was a hard man, but a fair man. And when I was a kid, I think Dad could have been the poster child for love hurts. When I was a teenager, if my dad, there he is, old cowboy Logan, if when I was a teenager, and I've thought through this, my dad says to me, Mark, I'm going to go on a trip, but I've left a letter with some instructions for you, and I want you to read it and do what the letter says. And so I open his letter, and I read it, and it says, Mark, my favorite son of my 4 boys. And that's what it would say. I know this is hypothetical, but there's some reality to it. My favorite son of my 4 boys, while I'm gone, I want you to hoe the garden every day, and every day I want you to keep the house straightened up. Other than those instructions, have fun. And oh, have I mentioned you're my favorite son? So he leaves, goes on his trip. When he comes home, the weeds have overtaken the garden. Before he even gets in the house, he ain't happy. Gets in the house, he sees clothes everywhere, Dorito bags, empty Mountain Dew cans all over the place. How do you think that would have went for me? I'd have been singing that old hymn, "Lord, I'm coming home." And I could have said, "But Dad, listen, I wrote some songs about you while you were gone. They talk about how a wonderful father you are." One of them even goes like this: "What a friend we have in Logan." Some of them are choruses, some of them are hymns. "And listen to this, Dad. I read those instructions you left me every day. I read them, I meditated on them, I memorized them. I even put them in a binder called Holy Instructions. And I know you're a King James guy, Dad, but you've always told me that the NIV stands for Newly Invented Version, but I wanted to put them in a modern version where people could read them. So I got this big binder, and we put it on the coffee table in the living room, and it's called Logan's Holy Instructions. And people come in, and they comment on that binder, Dad. They can't believe I've got that big book with your instructions sitting right there on the coffee table." Forget about the garden, the house. Forget about what you told me to do. This was all about you, Dad. Had that been a real situation, and not hypothetical, my life would have taken a totally different path, because your life takes a different path when you're killed at an early age. This isn't about appreciating the instructions. Now, let me point my finger at you all a little bit. This is like you saying amen to a sermon you ain't never going to follow. This is you going out the door and shaking my hand and saying, "That's a good message, Mark," when you have no intention of applying it to your life. That book was not given to us to applaud and to amen. It was given to us to apply. And your life will never be better until you determine that you're going to respond to what's in that book. A buddy of mine in Lexington sent me a picture of the Schwamp family in Michigan. They have 14 sons. Check this out. And the newest boy is far right. I forget how old he is now, but 14 boys, Mrs. Schwamp in the middle. Let me tell you why they have 14 boys. Because after boy number one, Mrs. Schwamp said, "I want a girl." And after boy number two, she said, I want a girl. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I want a girl. We're going to keep trying till I get a girl. Now, Allie, I want you to apply my preaching to your life, but don't apply this part, all right? After 10, 11, 12, I want a girl. So the 14th boy is born, and she names him Finley Sheboygan. Look at that name. She's a boy again. So I did a little research. And you can question her sanity if you want to, but truth is, she's ready to try for another girl. And you and I can't definitively say there won't be a breakthrough the next time for Mrs. Schwamp. We can't. Joshua and his boys marching around the walls of Jericho. Go back home, sleep, come back, and do the same thing next day. Go back home, sleep, come back, do the same thing the next day. Go back home, sleep, come back. 6 days, seventh day, march around it 7 times. Finally, after all of this same routine, doing the same thing over and over, doing what the Lord told us to do, there has been a breakthrough. Now listen to me, parents. If you don't invest in your kids intentionally when it seems to not be sinking in, you won't experience the moment of breakthrough where they come around and say, "You know what, Mom and Dad, you're not the idiots that I thought you were." People don't see anything happening, so they quit their Bible study. They don't see the answer they fashion in their mind, so they quit praying. Things have gone sour in the relationships at home, so they stop attending worship. They join the gym. They quit the gym. They ask for a refund because 6 pounds didn't melt off in 2 days. What do you mean I have to stay with it? Do the same thing over and over again. I'm telling you, there's power in same. It works in your body. It works in your spirit. It works in your mind. Some habits don't break overnight. Some take a lifetime. But then on that day you never know when it's going to come, something happens and something changes, all because you were there at your post doing what you were supposed to do. I played tennis in school. Tried to find an old picture. Thankfully, none exist. I had floppy hair, like down my shoulders, and I wore a headband, like a rainbow headband. I looked nerdy, like this guy right here. And honestly, I was kind of mouthy like he was too. And my tennis coach, he told me once, and I thought it was strange, he said, don't practice too much when I'm not with you. And I didn't understand that at all when he said it, because I told him, I thought practice makes perfect. And his response was cool. He said, no, practice makes permanent. You see, if I practice the wrong way long enough, then I get in some bad habits that could be hard to shake. And we do this with God. We get into these rituals. That's not what I'm talking about this morning. What I'm talking about is life-changing routines, not rituals. Unfortunately, for a lot of people, Jesus is their weekend activity, not their daily priority. And it's not just about doing the same thing the same way. It's about a dedicated, determined response. That means you give, not because you have it on your checklist to do, but you do it with a grateful heart. And you worship not because that's what you've always done, but because you know when you come to this place, you're going to be able to offer your songs and your heart to the Lord. And when you serve, you don't do it for some kind of recognition. You do it because you want to give back to God for what he's done to you. It's a dedicated response. Now, I'm all for new. I am. There's a building right there that I'm all for. And some of you who have been in this place forever and ever probably struggle with that change because you have a lot of memories and there's connections for you. So I'm not talking about not ever doing anything new and reaching out and changing things up. I'm like the elderly ladies in the nursing home, and they're sitting around a table, and this guy walks in, and they perk right up because they haven't seen anybody new there forever. And one of them elbows the other and says, "Looky there," said, "invite him to come over and sit with us." And she said, "No, you do that." She said, "Hey, come over here." So he walks their way, and they're kind of giggling like high school girls, and they're all in their 70s and 80s. And he sits down, and one of them kind of giggles and says, "What's your name?" And he said, "John." And they went, "Ooh, well, where are you from?" He said, "Well, I just got out of prison." And they all went, "Ooh, why were you in prison?" He said, "For killing my wife." And one of them said, "Ladies, you know what that means. He's single." Sometimes new is better, good. But I'm telling you, if you get into the right routine, doing the right things, same is a good word. Here's one last thought. Sometimes better means I need to decide to have more of a relationship with God than I do. I don't want to make you feel bad, not without any consequence to it anyway. What is your relationship with the Lord like this morning? Is it like a weekend date? Would that describe it? A daily walk? A casual acquaintance? What's your relationship with the Lord like? In John 15:4, he says, "Abide in me, and I will abide in you." You don't just wake up one day with a good handle on the Bible. I'm telling you, you don't. You have to study and abide in the Word. You don't just wake up one day and all of a sudden you're in great shape. Doesn't work that way. You don't just wake up one day and all of a sudden you're a great dad. Comes from making mistakes over and over and over. Don't just wake up one day and you have a strong prayer life. You know how you get a strong prayer life? By praying over and over and over again. You don't just wake up one day and all of a sudden you're a great giver to the work of the Lord. You start small and work your way up. You don't just wake up one day and you find your relationship with the Lord has never been stronger. It's the result of valleys and mountains and valleys and mountains and trials and victory, living and failing, trusting and learning, abiding in your relationship with Jesus. It's a daily, daily walk. The word daily makes us shrug our shoulders. I've always said the only problem with daily life is it's so daily. December 26th, 2004 changed the lives of hundreds of thousands of people in the Middle East. Tsunami came in, and you've seen pictures. I'm amazed by the devastation that this big wave can cause. 3 years after this, me and my friend Tom Benner, a co-worker, went to India, to the area that had been affected by the tsunami, to teach in a college and preach and visit with people. Had to learn a little bit of the Tamil language, which is a difficult language. I don't do English well. I mean, you all struggle sometimes to understand what I'm saying, so this was a challenge for me. But I tried real hard. And after the tsunami, there was a major problem with people who were just doing ridiculously bad things. For instance, there were people who would find kids who had been separated from their families and claim that those kids were theirs so that they could receive more aid money or food or water. So they'd go snatch kids who were by themselves and pretend that the kid belonged to them so that they could reap benefit from having that child. There was a little blind girl named Lima, and I met her 3 years later. She was 8 years old when I met her. She lost her hearing a few months before the storm hit, so she's deaf and she's blind. She's an easy target for someone to take. Nobody was sure where her parents were. People tried to claim her because of her physical condition. They knew, hey, a blind, deaf, five-year-old girl will reap us all kinds of reward. Every time somebody claimed that Lima belonged to them, when they tried to take her, she would reach up with both hands and feel their face because she couldn't see and she couldn't hear. And whenever she would feel someone's face, she would say, no, and she would shout, no, no, no. Imagine that scene one day as a woman enters the room and begins to wail, shouting out Lima's name. Someone claiming to be her mom. So she got down in front of Lima, and Lima put her hands on her face. And all of a sudden, a big smile took over that little girl's face as she shouted in Tamil, Ide in Nude Aurede Mungi Solomine, which means, I have felt this face many, many times. This is the face of my mother. She knew it was her mom because she had been there before and been there before and been there before. She had put her hands on this face over and over through the years, and because of that routine, because of that same action, because of doing the same thing over and over and over, she's reunited with her mother. Same is not always bad. Reminds me of a verse that I've always loved. It's a convicting verse, John 8:47. Whoever belongs to God hears what God says. The reason you do not hear is because you do not belong to God. Can you hear God this morning? Because if you cannot, then maybe you don't have the relationship that you thought you had. Let me encourage you this morning. Make this the day that you determine to have more of a relationship with Him. Doing more of the same thing, developing more of a routine, determining more of a response, and deciding to have more of a relationship with Jesus. That will lead to a better future. That will lead to a better life. And I promise you, that will lead to a better you. Amen.